You're listening to a Times Higher Education podcast.
Hello and welcome to this Times Higher Education podcast special following the conclusion of the 2017 World Academic Summit, hosted in partnership with King's College London, here in London, over the last 3 days. It's been a remarkable event. More than 450 delegates from 52 countries were in attendance, 76 speakers from 27 different nations addressed the summit, and there was no shortage of news coverage, not only from THE as you'd expect, but from respected news outlets across the world. My name is Chris Parr, I'm digital editor at THE. I'm joined by reporter Ellie Bothwell, editorial director of THE's global rankings Phil Beatty, and head of content and engagement for the THE World Summit series Tim Savula. It's been an amazing event, really, a fantastic array of speakers. We had the Oxford VC Louise Richardson, Nobel laureate Sir Paul Nurse, Peter Argerey, countless university leaders. Phil, perhaps I'll come to you first. What were the highlights for you from this event?
Thanks, Chris. Yeah, I mean, it was an extraordinary event. We had 500 people in the room from around 52, 53 countries, and a wonderful gathering. I think for me, actually, Louise Richardson, who provided the opening keynote, was excellent. I mean, she grabbed all the headlines because she had some choice words around the UK political debate. She talked about tawdry politicians talking down the sector. She was pressed on VC pay and defended robustly her £350,000-a-year salary. So she grabbed the headlines around some of those domestic issues, but actually beyond those headlines, she had an incredibly thoughtful speech. It was really a bit of a fight back against this kind of populist wave of anti-expertise rhetoric, really a sense of reasserting the incredible public value of universities, the incredible public good they do, not just in welcoming refugees and supporting international mobility of talent, but also in being bastions of truth. She was incredibly inclusive about all the great work that's being done across the sector, not just Oxford as the world number one university. She was talking about universities right across the spectrum, different missions and the good that they're doing. But most of all, this reassertion of universities as great bastions of truth, that we must be defended, that we must exercise our autonomy, speak truth to power, and work really hard to sort of challenge this sort of anti-fact, this anti-truth sort of world we're in, which is a really powerful call to action, I think.
Indeed, yeah. And while I've got you here, we should mention, of course, that the summit played host to the launch of the 2018 World University Rankings as well. There is a dedicated Rankings Results podcast available in the same place as you got this from. Just search for it on the THE site too. But a packed room for that announcement, a real sense that this is one of the most exciting launches we've had for the rankings.
Yeah, I mean, what was wonderful was that we had a room full of some of the university presidents ranked, and it was quite a nice session. That there was lots of eruptions of spontaneous applause and lots of genuine warmth and excitement about the way the rankings recognise excellence right across the world. You know, we had the president of NUS Singapore, Asia's number one ranked university, Tan Chor Chuan. We had Andy Hamilton in the room. We had from NYU, the fastest rising university in that top group. It went up five places in the upper echelons. Peter Matheson, Hong Kong News, top institution, Hong Kong's top institution. So it was a wonderful opportunity not just to reveal the results and celebrate the excellence across the world, but also to then analyse the results and really get insights into what it's telling us about the changes in the world and how things are developing.
Indeed, and you can find further analysis and insight if you head over to www.thewur.com. That's for all the ranking-specific coverage. Tim, I'll come to you now. You've been central to the organisation of this summit. You were there throughout, working very hard, I saw. What were your highlights in particular, do you think, from the event?
Yeah, I mean, it's been a really fantastic effort from King's College London as well, who we worked with in partnership over the last year, putting the summit programme together. And there are so many highlights from as Phil said, we had 75 speakers coming to London. I think two things that have stuck in my mind, actually, the day after the summit, and so I was thinking about my commute this morning, the comments. One was by Dr. Janet Ilieva, who's the founder and director of a consultancy firm called Education Insight, but she spoke in a panel about international mobility. And when we were originally planning the summit over a year ago, but, you know, 9 months ago, it was kind of post-Brexit, you know, Trump was elected, and as Phil mentioned earlier, you know, there's lots of issues around populism and, you know, greater boundaries and threats to mobility, and we thought that would be quite a key topic for the summit. But then she made a point that all the evidence that shows, and this is something she's worked on, so she really knows the evidence, it shows that mobility cannot be stopped. She said that, you know, if you try and put up any kind of boundaries, you can't stop mobility, you're only going to divert the flows. And so, in this sense that knowledge, I think, you know, if all the university administrators were here, you know, there's very much a sense that they were custodians of institutions that can create and promote and advocate knowledge. And this sense that mobility is always going to continue and it can only be diverted, and therefore, you know, if you're trying to stop it, you're only going to weaken your own institution or your nation's position. That had real resonance for all the audience in the room and had quite a bigger impact on me. And then following on from that, yesterday in the closing session of the summit, we had the Nobel laureate from Johns Hopkins University, Peter Ager, and he answered a question about the impact of Trump on research and, you know, will it prevent people wanting to come and study in the US or change people's minds about working in the big US you know, federal institutions. And he said that one of the things he'd learned from his experience was that politicians come and go, politics comes and goes, science stays, science always goes on. And that, you know, led to a spontaneous applause in the audience, and again was something that really pointed to the sustainability and the, you know, the power of knowledge and the work that we're doing and how that has to continue, and everybody in the room has a responsibility to further that.
Yeah, it was a remarkable session, and I was privileged to chair that global mobility session as well. Really interesting insights. We are recording this outside headquarters of THE in London. Apologies for any alarms going off in the background. I assure you we're all perfectly safe. Ellie, you were one of a very sort of dedicated reporting team from THE down at the event, and you were in that session yesterday with Nobel laureate Peter Agri too.
Yes, I thought one of the interesting things he said was he was asked about the biggest challenge he thinks is facing researchers or will face researchers in the next decade. And he spoke about the fact that he's afraid that young scholars will lose confidence in academia and lose heart in the sector due to, you know, the how much more difficult it is to now get funding, how it's a much more kind of onerous process to do that. And that you know, maybe young people will decide that actually there are easier ways to support their family. And there was also an interesting discussion kind of across the panel about, you know, the global challenges at the moment and whether universities are able to, you know, solve those challenges. And he mentioned about, you know, universities are very good at being kind of factually correct and morally correct, but they're not necessarily being convincing. And I think that was something that definitely sort of resonated with the audience too.
Indeed. Well, you can watch clips of all these sessions on our YouTube channel. Search for Times Higher Education on there. Maybe a couple of days before they're all there, but do keep checking back. There's coverage of the summit on timeshighereducation.com. Again, just search for World Academic Summit there. It'll bring all the coverage up. But to finish this podcast, we're going to hear from a few of the delegates who joined us in London as that alarm starts up again, just to hear what they thought of the event.
I'm Rivka Isaacson, Senior Lecturer in Chemical Biology at King's College, London.
You were on stage just now. What is it you'll take away from the 2017 THE World Academic Summit?
It was an incredible experience for me, actually, because, you know, it was me and millions of vice-chancellors of universities all over the world. So I spoke to all kinds of interesting people, got lots of mentoring advice, and, you know, it was the sort of thing I would never attend in normal life, and it was very enriching and informative.
My name is Uyo So. I'm formerly a postdoc, but now in Digister. I'm the vice president of Digister, and I think through the World Summit, we extend our networks with different universities, and also we understand, I think, university world rankings, and also how to improve the university qualities and internationalities like that. So basically, I'm coming here for three purposes: networking and the rankings, and then also how to improve our universities for the future.
Yeah. And do you leave feeling optimistic or pessimistic?
Well, I'm optimistic, very optimistic about it, you know, for the future of the universities. And
Maja Maricevic, Head of Higher Education at the British Library. I think it was great to both share the great complexity and the level of change that we are all living through at the moment, and to see that that really affects all colleagues in all countries in a very different way. But it was great to hear the level of readiness to collaborate, to overcome these things, to broaden collaboration to all sorts of different institutions and external parties. And it was nice to hear that people are committing to some more stable academic values of trust, of continuing research and the empirical discovery drive the agendas that are in front of us. So it was nice that there is stability that is felt in the discussions, as well as the keenly felt challenges.
You're listening to a Times Higher Education podcast.